Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is a new episode of He Gone, episode 4, man. This is actually a free episode. Of course, y'all know this is usually a Patreon exclusive, but I want to give y'all a free episode this week since we have a new episode of 4040 Club. I am your host, Scott. You know where to follow me, at Barbershare Scott on Twitter and Instagram. Follow the network, the Barbershare Network, at BarbershareNet on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to hear this podcast every other week, subscribe. Patreon.com/Barbershare Network and subscribe to the $10 package for the Barbershare All Access. We appreciate y'all. We got 71 subscribers right now. I want to get that up to 100 by the end of the summer. So let's get that going. Today we have a guest, our first guest on the show, man. I have my homie, my guy, Sean Davis from ESPN 1000, man. You can follow him at SD2 Mics on Twitter, man. How's it going, man?
Man, it's wonderful, man. We got one good win today on this
double.
Yeah, got to get the second one, stay ahead of the division, and go into Cleveland and knock them about two games further back, man.
Right, yeah. It's a good time right now to be a Sox fan. I am thoroughly enjoying this. I haven't had fun watching this team in shit. I can't tell you. It's been a long time, man. But what are your overall thoughts about this season? You know, we're sitting here, we're recording this in between the doubleheader against the Baltimore Orioles. We just won 7-4. We're at 30-20 as we're recording this. Got one more game today. What are your thoughts right now? White Sox are 30-20, sitting at 2.5 up in the division, despite all the injuries, despite all the La Russa shit. What do you think this team has been? Have they surpassed expectations so far? Or, you know, what do you like about this team so far?
I think we are experiencing best case scenario. And what I mean by that, if I go back to the middle of March and I tell White Sox fans that we're going to be without Eloy and Louie for about 12 weeks apiece, but yet and still with 10 games over 500 and in first place, clear two games.
Take it.
I would take it. Absolutely. Yeah. It wouldn't even matter what the composition of that would be. You know, look, La Russa gets blowing three games, his lineups, the way he handled the Mercedes situation, injuries, nagging injuries, having to overplay our big three, which is right now Moncada, Abreu, and Tim.
Yeah.
They have to be worn out right now.
Yeah.
And then throwing the fact that Gio really hasn't been Gio.
Not at all.
Like, if you tell me all of that, but you tell me I'm 10 games above 500 in first place, I take it.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about this team too, man, is, you know, I didn't expect Dallas Keuchel to pitch like a fifth starter this year. Like, he's really been kind of like the weak link. And Gio, I think his last two starts, he's gotten real, real better. He's gotten real, real better, and I do have faith in him long term. But I'm with you. If you look at all the stuff that we've dealt with over this first, 2 months of the season, it's kind of impressive that we are what we are. And I think the most impressive part about it is the power hasn't really hit this lineup yet. So last year, I was really worried that we were real home run heavy. And like, could you manufacture runs? Could you be able to score runs if you're not hitting the long ball? I think we're slowly getting to that point. We had two home runs today, Jake Lamb and Yoan finally hitting the bomb. Jose Abreu, I look, like I said, build the statue, man. Build the statue. Like, you know how people call Ohio State linebacker you? The White Sox is first base university, first man. You know what I'm saying? You have Frank Thomas, Paul Konerko, Abreu, and we got Andrew Vaughn on deck. I mean, it's to the point where, like, you might have to trade Gavin Sheets. Like, I don't even know where Gavin Sheets fits in this lineup.
Where he fits. Yeah, that's
fact. And he's mashing shit in Charlotte right now. So, I'm happy right now. Like, as far as – and I think the exciting thing is – we know once we get Eloy and Luis, and I think Luis getting on that 60-day IL this week was great news because that means that, you know, his rehab is going well. Eloy's already swinging bats. If you look on his IG story, he's already in the cages. I mean, once they get back, we're going to really, really, you know, go on a run up in here.
And we have some players that are making really big contributions, man. You can say what you want to say. Billy Hamilton has come up with some clutch hits over the last 3 weeks. Jake Lamb, big home runs. He had one in Minnesota. He had one today. And we talked about this before the season. And I told you, I said, look, from what I've seen of him a few times on TV in college, and from what I continue to hear to people around the organization, Andrew Vaughn is ready.
Like, yeah, he's ready. Hey, I just want to let y'all know, Sean is what takes me off the ledge when I'm like freaking out about White Sox shit. Like, I was so mad that we didn't sign a vet during the offseason. Like, you need a vet at DH. Now, granted, I didn't expect Yermín Mercedes to even make the team. I think that's
neither one of us, right?
Good thing to come out of Eloy's injury is you got Yerm. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. He's just Yerm is a superstar. Like, let's just call it what it is. Like, he's on the MLB Instagram story yesterday with six chains on, playing Pop Smoke in the locker room with Carlos Rodon. I just love everything about that kid. But Andrew Vaughn, you told me, like, back in camp, he was like, nah, this dude, he's legit. He's ready to go. You know what I'm saying? And he's looking amazing so far. I'm really, really impressed.
He's going to get better. He's going to get better. Now, White Sox fans need to really embrace what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's hit us yet.
It definitely hasn't. Yeah.
It hasn't hit us yet. Like, we are really in a great position as an organization. Like, presently, what is to come in the near future, and we can go out and space that out to like 4 to 5 years. I really think, like, we're still going up on this roller coaster, and it'll be a while before we go down.
And the good thing is, you're in a division that there's really not that much competition. Like, I think Detroit has a nice foundation. I even like a little bit what Kansas City's doing, but I still think they're 3-4 years away before they're legit threats. Cleveland, to me, and we'll get into them later in the podcast, they're kind of the situation where the Cubs are. Like, yeah, they're competitive, but eventually, what you gonna do with Jose Ramirez? Are you gonna keep Shane Bieber? Like, you already got rid of Frankie, you know, Frankie Lindor. So that really kind of tells you that these owners aren't trying to pay anybody. So it's like the White Sox have a long window, and the core for the most part is locked up. I think Gio's contract comes up in like a year, but besides that, Tim is locked up. Tim got two player options at the end of his contract. Yoan's locked up, Eloy Luis. So we got the core, and you got guys coming up. We're gonna get into Oscar Colas later in the podcast, but you know, you got Tatis' brother, you know, Elijah Tatis. I saw a video today of him hitting the home run. You got Cespedes' little brother. You know, there's a lot of great players coming up in the system to where it's like, this is kind of like the golden age of White Sox baseball that we were hoping for so long time ago.
And you don't forget, right behind Cespedes last year in the international pool, we got the number one pitcher out of the international pool as well. So, you know, I think I talked to you via text about a week ago, and I was like, you know what? As upset as we are, and a lot of people still hold on to the Machado negotiations, I was like, we have to start giving Rick Hahn some credit. We just have to, because what he's put together and what he had in line to give us the depth, because that's what most people thought. The White Sox didn't have depth.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up.
Most people were laughing, and they were fans of other teams. I'll just leave it at that. They said we didn't have the depth, and I still say if this was a normal baseball season, meaning that our farm systems would have started in March rather than starting in May, you might have seen Gavin Sheets break camp with the team, you know? And then how does that impact Yerm? So I just think everything has worked out perfectly, and we're stocked, and we have weapons in AAA that are ready to trade if we need to go out and get another bat. To sit around and wait for our big two guys to come back. But then again, like you just talked about, if you go down to Winston-Salem and Kannapolis, we have talent coming.
Yeah. I kind of feel like we're following the Dodgers mode, because one thing I love about the Dodgers is they're stacked in the major league team, but then they still got guys coming up in the minors. And everybody was screaming about depth. Billy Hamilton's been producing. Look, I didn't like the Jake Lamb signing, but Jake Lamb has had good at-bats. He had a big home run in Minnesota last week. He had a big home run today. He's been producing. He's a solid outfielder. He's been doing good. I mean, Lourdes Garcia could be doing better, you know, but I still think Lourdes is a decent bench piece. I mean, he's the longest tenure White Sox. And he had a little 5 or 6 game streak where he was hitting everything. So, you know, even if Yerm is depth, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people ignore the fact Yermín Mercedes is depth. And you're really just seeing this team just step up in ways that, you know, it's going to help us come, you know, October when, you know, it's game time. I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, we're talking about Andrew Vaughn and, you know, how that guy, I think he's going to be a complete stud. Like, you know, and the fact that he's playing pretty good in left field. You know what I'm saying? I've been more impressed with him in left field than I have with Eloy in the last 2 years he's been playing left field.
And he played a good first base.
Yeah, he played a good first base too. Yeah, yeah, and we all know that's going to be the position for him when Pito's contract ends next year. But let's talk about Dylan Cease, because this was the guy that I was probably the most worried about, even more worried than I was Rodon. Because my issue with Rodon has never been him being bad. It's can he be healthy? Right. Rodon was never a bad pitcher. Now, granted, he wasn't as good as he is now, but he was never a great, never a bad pitcher. He just couldn't stay healthy. Dylan Cease last year had home run problems. He had walking problems, and he looks like a completely different pitcher out there. And I was asking, yelling at my TV for Tony to take him out in the first game against Baltimore, but I'm glad he kept him in there. He faced adversity, and he got out. What do you see that's different from Dylan Cease compared to the last 2 years?
Man, you know what? It's very reminiscent. And we have to go back to when Don Cooper first came on the scene. One of the first things he did was point out to Contreras, like, yo, you're tipping your pitches.
Yeah.
So we have to change the way you grip your splitter in the glove so that you don't give it away. And the next thing you know, Contreras goes on to have, like, the best 2.5 years of his career. And I think him along with Ozzy, if you look, I think the perfect comparison to Dylan Cease would be John Garland, right?
Okay.
You had this dude with stuff, but he
John
just
Garland had stuff. Great stuff.
Great stuff, but never seemed to get it right. Just never seemed to get it right. And all of a sudden, Ozzy came, and Ozzy said, I'm not about to give you the cop-out excuse that you're coming out in the fifth inning. Like, dude, I'm going to put you in positions, and you have to get out of it. And sometimes he did. And eventually you saw his confidence grow, and it paid great dividends when we went on that World Series championship run. And you saw he was probably, he might have been the best pitcher of the four in that championship run because he was clutch. So I think they have just chosen to give this kid the confidence. It's like, dude, we're not snatching you out. You're going to learn.
Yeah,
you have to take your bruises, and here's your stuff. Throw your fastball for strikes. And throw your breaking pitches, you know, when you get down 0-2. What was that? The other night, he basically got hurt on 0-2 counts.
Yeah.
Like both times.
Both times.
He had to battle 0-2 and threw a bad changeup and I think a slider up in the zone, and he just got hurt. Other than that, he found a way to, go six innings, threw about 113
pitches, career high. Career high for him.
Yeah, so for
and
him,
had 10 strikeouts. Let's not forget about that.
Yes, but 29 swings and misses.
Yeah.
Which is the most he's ever had in the game.
And on top of that, it's the most in Major League this season. He ties with Jacob DeGrom, and that's a hell of a category.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So as much as it probably seemed like you would probably say, man, he didn't have his best stuff and he struggled. But, I mean, yo, he put in work.
But I think that's the mark of a good pitcher, when you don't have your best stuff and you still find a way to win the game. We've been seeing that from Carlos Rodon. I got to give it up Ethan Katz, man. Ethan Katz is coming in. Like, me and you, all Sox fans vibe. We've been saying for a decade that Don Cooper should have got fired. Like, I don't – I understand Reinsdorf is loyal to his guys, but Jesus Christ. Like, that's his Jerry Manuel, if I'm not mistaken. He's pre-Ozzy.
And Don Cooper is still going around saying he doesn't know why he got fired.
Come on, like, dude.
What?
Right. Like, come on. Like, Ethan Katz is coming in. And mechanically, he's changed these guys. Even with Gio said that, like, when he got rocked in his before these last two starts, that Ethan Katz found something in his delivery that he was messing up. Changed it.
Right.
Went out there. 8 innings dominated Minnesota. This past game, he was really, really good. And you're slowly starting to see him turn around. And, you know, I think this starting pitching, I think it's probably – I would put us – I think we're the second best rotation league. I would give San Diego number one. But I would think we're right up there, man. If you see, like, you know, if you got Giolito right now, it's like, you know, probably your third or fourth guy right now. I'll probably put Rodon, Lynn, then probably Gio, and then Cease, and Dallas is last. I give Dallas a pass just because he's older and he's been having back spasms. I don't think he's been the same guy since the back issue last year in Kansas City.
I agree with that. And then one thing I will point out that Ethan Katz has really done for all of these guys, especially for Dylan Cease, he's worked on the mental approach to the game.
Yeah.
Like, stop worrying about your stuff. You have good stuff. He can pretty much say that to everybody. Everybody on this staff has good stuff. You throw 94 to 97. Be consistent in your delivery. Throw from the same arm slot and be aggressive in your pitches and trust in your pitches. And that's what he's done. And he's also challenged Gio. Look, it's cool to go out, have a great season, and become one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball with your fastball and your changeup.
Yeah.
But you're not going to the next level without that slot.
Yeah. Yeah, he got
he's been saying that to Gio since the offseason.
Yeah.
And you saw in the last start, Gio's slider was much better in the last start.
Yeah. And I just really love what he did with Rodon. Like, Rodon, I don't think the White Sox are going to re-sign him because you got Kopech. And I think Dallas has one more year on this contract.
But I think that would be a mistake not to sign Rodon. And the reason I say that is because you really don't know physically how Dallas is going to hold up.
Right. That's good. Good point.
Now, you know, Rodon wanted to be a part of this team. So he has an affinity for the ownership, for Rick Hahn, and this organization that drafted him. He's the one that called them and said, look, I want to be a part of this squad.
He did. Give me an invite. I forgot he got released. Yeah.
So when you think about that, I think in negotiations, and especially seeing the arc that the team is on, he wants to be a part of this. So he might sign a 2-year deal and say, yeah, I want to be a part of this. Give me 2 years for 20.
I do that for sure, just off the fact that we don't know what Dallas is going to be. But, like, we talk about Gio, but I think the main reason why I'm not worried about Gio, because I don't think he's the ace of this team. The ace is Mr. Kopech. And let's talk about him.
Everybody knows him. everybody knows.
Kopech has a $300 million arm. I'm so glad that, you know, it was just a hamstring issue from the other game, because I freaked out for a minute. I was like, no, we don't need my boy to get hurt. I was in the stadium for his first start at home this year. It was cold as hell there. Like, I've been to 2 baseball games this year. The White Sox Rangers game was cold as hell. The Angels Dodgers game I went to was hot as hell. Like, there was no in between. I was dying both ways. But, you know, to see Kopech, and it's like he has command. They're like, guys aren't touching him at all. Like, even when the Yankees got like a home run off him, like, that's all they can really do with him. Like, and I feel like if you can have Giolito be your number 2 in this rotation, that's stupid.
And Gleyber Torres hit a basic fly ball that only goes out of Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium.
So you have to live with that. And like you said, man, what this kid is going through, I remember arguing with people after the game 3 loss to Oakland. People are arguing with me, talking about we need to trade Kopech. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, what are you talking? We can get something back for him. I said, first of all, no one's going to trade for him after surgery and they haven't seen him pitch. That's number one. And number 2, you don't give up the first piece of the rebuild. He was the foundation of the rebuild.
Him and Moncada. Yep, him and Moncada. Yeah.
That's the foundation. You don't give up on that. And I think Ethan Cass has paid dividends once again because he adjusted the windup for Michael Kopech. He made the windup shorter and made it closer to where he would be in the stretch. So when he goes from one to the next, it really doesn't mess up his delivery.
Yeah.
Because Michael Kopech, when he would switch up, he would lose his arm slot and you would see his fastball get a little wild. And now you see the consistency in his fastball. He can throw up for strikes consistently. And then his breaking pitches are just
knee-buckling. It's filthy. You can't do nothing with it, man. And you bringing up the trade in the Kopech thing, it goes to my next thing. Lance Lynn, I got to give him a big L, as I like to call him, dog. He is an innings eater. He's just tough. Like, I feel like I would, and if we had a game 7, I would have no problem with Lance Lynn being on that
mound. At all.
You know what I'm saying? He's a gamer. He's going to save your bullpen. And I liked Dane Dunning a lot. I think Dane Dunning is going to be a good pitcher in Texas. When you have an opportunity, this is what blew me about White Sox Twitter, because last year, I never forget, last year during the trade deadline,
they were upset. Yeah.
They were upset that Rick Hahn didn't go get Lance Lynn. Go give him Madrigal. Give him Vaughn. But then when he trades him, and all you had to give was Dane Dunning, I saw it during the winter meetings. I was like, that's a fucking steal.
Right.
Well, that's a steal. And then people complaining about that. I'm like, y'all the same ones who wanted to give up Vaughn and Magical. And all we had to give up was Denny. You know what I'm saying? And people are like, I think he's going to get a contract extension for sure. I'm not worried about that at all. And it's just really good to see him going out there and just dominating the way, you know, he's been doing. And it's like, it helps the offense. It gives the offense chance after chance to get better. And when we see what happened in New York, this is the reason I wasn't upset about the New York sweep.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one of them series where just nothing was going our way. Like, you had Brett Gardner out there making plays in center field. Gardner, right, old as hell. He don't even play center field anymore. So it's just one of them games like, okay, you had a triple play that we'd have won game one. I feel like if that triple play didn't happen. And I feel like later down the line, when we see them again in August, we'll be healthy.
Right.
We'll be healthy, and we'll see what time it is.
Well, man, first, Lance Lynn, I love that dude in the postgame. When he beat the Cardinals, he said, this might be the most important win of my career, which is crazy. And I had to go back and do some research. Like, man, did he leave St. Louis on bad terms? You know, because he was on championship teams. And I guess there was some issues with the front office when he left. He wanted to stay there. So, and then he was like, yeah, you know, he's like, ultimately, I'm an asshole.
Yeah, I was like, that.
You know what?
I'm
like, any dude that throws 87% fastballs has to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Because he's basically saying, dude, I'm throwing this the majority of the time. Come hit it.
I
know you can't hit it. You know, that's a butthole.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's an asshole. And that's what he is. And you need those type of guys on the pitching staff.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to win a championship. You need a guy like a Curt Schilling, somebody that's going to be that asshole,
yeah,
that's going to aggravate the other team and inspire the, you know, his other pitchers, his other starters, man. And to go back, I agree with you. And I think we texted this last weekend after they lost after they lost Saturday. And I text you and I was like, we good.
Yeah.
I was like, we good. Yeah. We'll see y'all in the offs. Like, yeah, I was like, cool. Cause I'm like, we competed with you last night. We stuck with you until you got the Cease. When he lost, because Cease was mowing him down the first three innings.
Yeah, first three innings, then he went off the rails.
Then he got a little wild, and then he come back. Dallas pitched a really good game. We stayed in that game. We tied up late, and I'm saying to myself, oh, we good.
Yeah.
Y'all letting us compete with y'all, and we don't even have our big dogs?
Vaughn hitting the home run off Chapman's first. First run Chapman's given up in almost a year.
Yeah.
And my homie, who's a diehard Yankee fan, like, he got the Yankees logo tattooed on him. He's from New York. He texts me like, y'all nice. He said, I'm not even gonna lie to y'all. He said, this sweep don't tell the story. He was
right.
Like, he said, y'all not healthy, and like, everything just been going our way. He said, so yep, this is one of them series, like, y'all gonna be fine. So even if they know that, like, you gotta, even if you look at the rest of the league, like, I was watching the Astros Padres game last night. And I was like, and this is a perfect segue. I was like, you know, I complain about our bullpen, but it's not that bad. Like, it's going through some situations, but the bullpen that's from the Padres and the Astros last night, it was just leaking. And so here's the question I have for you. Like, the bullpen hasn't, I feel like it's been mid so far. Like, Liam, mm-hmm, I think has been great. I don't think he's being used the best. What do you think? What have you seen from the bullpen in these first 50 games? And what do you expect to see them for the rest of the year?
I definitely don't think I don't think anybody in the bullpen has lived up to their full potential or peaked, which is good, because when the dust settles, you want the cohesion of the bullpen to be at an all-time high when you go into late August,
yeah,
and you start going into September. And I think that's what you're going to see. For me, you know, you saw me arguing with people on Twitter that pretty much said the White Sox were only two games over 500 at the time, strictly because of the bullpen. And I'm like, dude, what are you watching?
Right.
Like, I understand what you're saying. The bullpen has been leaking a little bit, but I think everybody has had like short streaks of dominance.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
one or two games where it looked like right before Bummer gave up that home run to Sano in the Minnesota series, his like previous four outings were dominant.
Yeah.
We just watched Evan Marshall has had four straight outings where he's been really good.
He's really good today.
The only one that has really struggled consistently is Matt Foster.
Yeah.
He's the only one that really hasn't come around. We got Jace Fry coming back. He's down on his rehab assignment. And then Ruiz has looked Ruiz has been better.
Is Jimmy Cordero done for the year?
Yeah, he's out for this.
He's out for the year. This is my thing about Jose Ruiz. He's been better than last year, but I still think Jose Ruiz is a guy you only put in if you're up a lot or you're down a lot.
If we have a chance to win the game, you don't put him in the game.
Yeah, like Tony, I feel like Tony forfeited the third game against St. Louis. Even though we weren't hitting for shit in that game, it was a two-run game. It's like, why are you putting Jose Ruiz in there? You put him in a week before and see, okay, you've been pitching well. Let's see how you're doing, high leverage situation. And he didn't deliver. I think the biggest issue for me right now is Tony not using the bullpen the way it needs to be. I feel like this is 2021. You can use Liam Hendricks in a tie ball game on the road. Like the Yankees just did it with Chapman. He needs to start doing that. If you need to bring him in the eighth inning, do that. Use him the way Oakland used him. You know what I'm saying? Use him the way he was used against us in the playoffs.
Especially with the change to the extra inning rules.
Yeah, exactly. Which he didn't
might as well do it.
Yeah. And so it's like you got to use that. And Garrett Crochet, even though he hasn't been good in the innings he's been playing, sometimes Tony puts him in bad situations. Right. So I'm like, if you're not going to put him in a good situation, send him down to get some more time so he can throw his innings in. I still think he has a very important future on this roster, whether it's a starter or somebody in the bullpen. I just feel like Tony needs to get better with the way he manages the bullpen.
And the early struggles to Garrett Crochet, we eventually found out, were because he was just a knucklehead.
Yeah.
Like he was dealing with a back issue and didn't want to say anything. And it just got too painful. And by that time, he had gone out and had like four or five inconsistent outings. He came back after being off for 10 days. And the next thing you know, he comes out and has two really good outings. So Garrett Crochet, in my opinion, is going to be fine. It was good to see his velocity get back up to 98, 99 after the back issue. I'm with you, though. The use of the bullpen is the biggest issue. And we're saying all of this, and it's still the third best bullpen, tied for the third best bullpen in the American League.
Yeah.
The only bullpens that are better are Tampa and the Yankees. Tampa, the Yankees, and I forget who else. It might be the Astros, but I believe it's Tampa and the Yankees for sure. It's one more team, and then it's the White Sox.
Yeah, and you know, I do think it's going to get better. I do think, you know, we'll get to the deadline in a minute. I think we need another right-hander in the bullpen for sure.
Okay.
I think we need that. Foster, he hasn't been as good, but I don't think there's really he's not going to be one of the top guys. You know, you're going to have, you know, Evan Marshall be, you know, your sixth or seventh inning guy. Eighth inning guy is going to be Bummer. You know, your setup guy will be Bummer. And Liam, you know, I know Liam's had a couple rough starts, but you know, he's got what, 13 saves now? Like he's been as advertised. They just got to use him a little better. And you know, Kopech's gonna be that middle relieving inning guy the rest of the season too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our manager, Tony La Russa, man. Tony La Russa has been the talk of the major leagues. You know, we know with him being hired in general. Like I was very upset about that. And then, of course, the situation with, you know, not knowing the extra inning rules, this whole big situation when you're me, Mercedes. What do you feel about this thing, this, you know, all the drama he's been caused? I know even some White Sox fans upset about the name change in the park and making La Russa's Lounge. I forgot whose name was. It was a worker there who had been there for a long time who didn't change the name. They changed it to La Russa. I personally don't care that much about it, but White Sox Twitter was getting upset about that. What do you think, you know, how he's been off the field and just managing? How do you think the La Russa ride has been so far?
The one thing I can say about Tony La Russa from everyone that I've heard is that the communication between him and the leaders in the locker room is really good. It's really good. Regardless of what the situation is, regardless of how they disagree, they're having conversations, and they're coming out of the conversations with solutions. It's not like they're just talking and they're like, okay, this is what I feel, that's how you feel, whatever. No, they're coming together and they say, okay, what are we going to do moving forward? The situation with Yermin, I'm totally with everybody else. I think it was mishandled by him, especially through the media, what he said. But he said something 2 days afterwards, and he said, look, people misinterpreted what I said to think that I had a problem with the fact that Yermin swung 3-0. He was like, I never have a problem with him swinging 3-0. I never have a problem with swinging against infielders or any other positional players pitching. He said, I have a problem with the fact that we gave him a sign and he was so amped up to compete against his boy, his friend that was on the mound, that he totally just ignored the sign we gave him. And so I'm trying to get him to be focused in every situation. Like, yo, be focused. You can't miss signs. And he said, from that, me saying what I said in the media, my purpose for doing that was to protect the team, because I wanted to put across that we took care of it and the Twins didn't have to worry about taking care of it the next game by throwing at one of my players.
Right.
So that was his mindset. And when I heard him say that, I was like, okay, you were trying to play mind games with the Twins. I get it. Still in all, if you were dealing with a veteran, if it was Tim Anderson, I can see you rocking that way. You're dealing with a kid that you need to continue to show that you have his back. He's a rookie, and he needs to know that his manager and his teammates have his back in that situation.
Right.
And the conversation, Gio talked about it, Tim Anderson talked about it. Yeah, we have a conversation about it. We have a clear understanding. We understood where coach was coming from, but this is what we believe. We rock with him. And I'm still, man, I hear some T-shirts that are around Chicago that said swing 3-0. Yeah. I'm trying to find me one.
Yeah, I need one of them too. And one thing I loved about it is home run against the Orioles the other night was on a 3-0 count.
Yeah.
And even so today, in the first game, it was a 3-0 count against Matt Harvey, and the crowd was going crazy. You know what I'm saying? And one thing I do say, like, as anybody who listens to the 40-40 podcast, I do not like the La Russa move. Like, I'm gonna put, like, he's a Hall of Fame coach, like, no doubt. I'm not shitting on his resume.
We agree. That was a better hire.
It was a better hire. To me, this is the equivalent of bringing Phil Jackson out of retirement to coach the Nets.
Yes.
He's fucking old as shit. Like, right. Phil Jackson ain't coached. Like, actually, Phil Jackson retired the same year Tony La Russa did. So it's like, it's kind of like bringing Phil out. Phil can't adjust today's game of basketball. Nobody's running a triangle in 2021. So it's like, that's how I kind of feel about La Russa. But one thing I love about this team is there's no way I was going to cause friction in the locker, in the dugout. It hasn't. The team is like, look, no. We respect Tony. You know what I'm saying? We might not listen to him all the damn time, but we respect him. There's no beef, and we still doing our thing. And in the midst of all this chaos, they had Moncada Day. Everybody dressing up like Yoan, and even Tony was on the plane smiling, you know, on Yoan's IG story. So you just see that they're out there like, we're still going to try to win games, and that's what I love about it.
I think he was given a mandate, right? Mm-hmm. I think when he sat in Arizona with Jerry Reinsdorf, I'm sure he was like, why do you want me to manage this team? And he was given a mandate by Jerry Reinsdorf to say, yo, we're good, we're young, we're exciting, we have swag. He was like, I just think we need some structure. We need a little structure. It's cool for us to be swagged out, but when it comes down to it, we're going to have some form of structure and fundamental to win the world championship. And that's what I want you to bring to this team. People might not like it. They might not like the fact that we're using you to do it. But, hey, that's what we need, and that's my choice. And like you said, I think he's learning the game all over again.
Yeah.
Just like everybody else is sitting here trying to get used to his mistakes and trying to see how he's going to grow. He's growing as a manager because the game is not the same.
Yeah.
But he's not being a jerk.
No.
And he's to his players.
Yeah,
he's not being a jerk to his players. They have great communication. And I'll say one more thing. I actually talked to someone the other day when St. Louis was in town, and they worked for the St. Louis Cardinals, and they were telling me, like, man, you have to understand that Tony does things that you won't understand why until October.
Okay. So that's actually a good question. Are you worried about Tony come October?
You remember I was one of the guys that said that's the reason you go get him.
Right.
Because when it's time for big series, I feel like that's an advantage.
Okay.
You know, in contrast to what we had previously.
Yeah.
Of course, you look at what happened, leaving Matt Foster out there just to die.
In
when
Seattle.
You went into the seventh inning with a lead in Seattle. Stuff like that. It's like, man, what's going on? And the other mistakes he's made, the other debacles he's had as a manager, early in the season, you say to yourself, like, man, I don't know if we can really have faith if he goes into a series with Terry Francona and we have to win 2 out of 3 to win a division in September. Like, man, how do I feel? And when this guy told me, look, Tony believes that this team is a World Series championship team. And the reason I know he believes it is because he's managing it the way he manages.
And he would never came out of retirement.
Order to do that,
yeah, he would never came out of retirement if this wasn't
a World Series team. If this wasn't a team and the organization they believed in. Because he said for the last 2 or 3 years, he's been sitting up, you know, at various baseball games watching teams.
Yeah.
And he saw the talent. So he was impressed by the talent. I'll say this. Everyone takes issue with his lineups, right? What this person pointed out to me, he did the same thing in St. Louis. And he said, you go back and you look at his World Series championships and look at the bench guys that had major impact in those World Series and playoff series.
Shit, David Freese.
And he said the reason they had major impact is because he played them during the regular season.
It's a real Phil Jackson philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a real Phil Jackson type philosophy. Yeah. And they call it the Cardinal way. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
You know, one thing that I was tweeting about, I was like, damn, I'd be tired with these off day lineups. And then as a guy follow, he's a diehard Cardinal fan. He tweeted me the gift of first time. I'm like, basically saying Tony did this when he was with us. Like, this is nothing new. But I'm gonna give Tony credit on this, that even those lineups we disagree on, we've won those games. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And you've seen other guys come in. It feels like the whole team is one. Like, I love Billy Hamilton saying that Tim Anderson has been talking to him like, yo, you know, you got great defense, but go out there and hit that ball. And he had a clutch, you know, RBI the other night. And it's just like, you can really just see the camaraderie with this team. And it's just, you know, I'm not a fan of the manager, but I do feel like, you know, we're in good hands. And I feel like, you know, he's lost us a couple games, but most of the games he lost is because of the players. And I feel like White Sox Twitter, they like to blame everybody but the players.
But the players, yeah.
And it's just like, okay, whatever. Like, it's the play. The bunting. I argue White Sox Twitter about bunting all the time. I personally have a problem with bunting. Maybe I'm old school. But if you can't get on base, you got to find a way to get on base.
Bro, what was that the other night? I think I had an argument on Twitter for about 30 minutes with this one guy. He's telling me about, you know, win percentage.
Yeah, win percentage. Goes
down and all this stuff. I said, man, look, your best two run producers came up twice with men on base
and did nothing
with less than 2 outs and did nothing. The manager's job is to put them in the position to win the game. He did that. It doesn't matter how he did it.
He did it. And that was that one game, Yerm left like 8 people on base by himself.
Yeah.
By himself, he did
it. He said Yerm took that hard after the game.
Yeah.
He said he took it hard. Like, he cost him the game and came back the next night, hit that 3-0 homer. So,
well, I want to talk about Yerm real quick before we get into division, because I feel like the Yerm situation is interesting. It's an interesting situation for the White Sox, because when Eloy comes back this year and you have Andrew Vaughn, where is Yerm's place in this team long term? Because I said something, I put in the 40-40 chat, me and Pierce were talking about it, and Pierce got mad at me at this, and he's a Cub fan. I was like, I wouldn't be opposed to trading Yerm in the winter meeting, just for the simple fact that I don't know where he fits. Unless you decide to teach this man how to be a reliable catcher, where's he gonna fit? There's nowhere for him to fit. So what do you think about, you know, where Yerm's fit is long term on this roster? And he's 28 on top of that.
I feel bad, because once our guys come back, there are going to be guys like Jake Lamb and Billy Hamilton that, yo, there's no spot for you, right?
Yeah.
But you're going to get a ring.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We're going to definitely show you love because you contributed. And, I mean, it's just a numbers game, man. I wouldn't have a problem trading Yerm.
Yeah. I wouldn't either. You can get a nice haul back. And I feel like for Yerm, give him an opportunity to be an everyday starter summer. Because even when Eloy comes back this year, I feel like Yerm is going to be like kind of how Schwarber was when in the Cubs World Series. When he's going to be one of those pinch hitting guys. Because whether we like it or not, like, Eloy is going to be the everyday DH. I don't think they're going to force him to the outfield fresh off of injury. He's going to be the everyday DH, and Andrew Vaughn is going to be in left field. So eventually Andrew Vaughn's gonna be the everyday first baseman when Pito is gone, and you're probably gonna have Cespedes in left field 9 times out of 10. So it's like, and then Eloy's gonna be a DH. So there's nowhere for Yerm to go. So I would prefer, you know, you get rid of him this year, coming off of, you know, maybe he's rookie of the year. Him and Andrew Vaughn are going at it for rookie of the year. Maybe he's rookie of the year. You can go out there and get you a nice haul, man. Get you a couple more pitchers back for him. And I think it's a good, it's like an embarrassment of riches for the White Sox right now.
That's gonna be, hey, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm with you. That would be a really tough sell in that locker room.
Oh, for sure.
Like, forget Sox fans. I mean, dude, that locker room,
yeah,
that
dude
is loved.
Yeah.
In that White Sox locker room by young players and vets. So to sell that, especially to Pito, who was like a mentor to the kid, like Pito is talking to him like after every at bat.
Yeah.
I don't know. He did something, I want to say like 2 weeks ago, and he came into the dugout and Pito pulled him to the side like, hey, yeah, don't do that.
Everybody on the team, Pito's like the father of the team. Like even I like Eloy was like, man, I cried when he won MVP. Like, you know, T.A., I feel like Pito is the non-vocal leader. T.A. is the mouthpiece. Like T.A. is the real manager of this team, in my opinion. Like T.A. go out there and talk and shit. Like T.A. was like, Twins are some bums in the preseason. Like, you know, he was out there doing all that. So I feel like the only way, if you're going to keep him, then all offseason, he need to be learning how to catch. If that's what we're going to do,
facts.
Send Zach Collins out of here and teach Yerm how to catch. That's the only way I can see him being on roster long term.
Now, I'm with that. Sending him to catching school?
Yeah.
You know, even if
– lock him in with Grandal. You know, bring AJ in for like a summer. Like, yo,
right.
Let's show this boy the ropes.
Right. I agree with that. That'll be dope.
Yeah.
If he can learn how to catch –
then there's a place for his roster. If not, then there's going to be some tough decisions to make.
Tough decisions.
Let's talk about the AL Central, man. The White Sox up 2.5 right now as we're recording this game. Two has started. Cleveland is 27-22. Kansas City's only 6 behind. Minnesota, I said on our preseason pod, and Pierce was blown away when I said, I was like, Minnesota's not going to win the world, not going to win the Central, and they're going to finish third in the division. But I didn't expect them to be this damn bad. Like, they're 21-30. They're a game better than Detroit right now. Yeah. And Detroit's actually look more promising than that because Detroit has an excuse. What do you let's just talk about Cleveland really? Do you think Cleveland is gonna be able to battle us this entire season? Like they haven't, they're not a good offensive team. Now they have Franmil Reyes, who's one of their big bats. He's out for 2 months, and it's gonna put a lot more pressure on Jose Ramirez. And then you got the deadline coming up where I feel like the Cleveland front office is gonna have to make some decisions. Do you think this is gonna be a team that's gonna follow us around the rest of the season, or the White Sox just going to really just steamroll?
Man, you know what? This is my opinion. We have 4 coming up, starting with this doubleheader on Monday. I think the White Sox are going to take 3 out of 4 when they're going to Cleveland. I really believe that, and I think that's going to be the start of the White Sox beginning to stretch the lead in the division out and have it comfortably at about 4 to 5 games going into the All-Star break, which is dangerous territory, because if we're 4 or 5 games up and we start to get healthy, it's a wrap.
It's a
like, no, you're not catching us. That's like Usain Bolt with like a 5-yard lead at like 70 meters. That's 5-meter lead is 70 meters. You're not catching us. So Minnesota, on the other hand, a lot of people still think they have a chance, especially people in the media locally. Are still scared of them because they see Kirilloff coming back healthy. Byron Buxton was, man, playing MVP baseball.
I like Byron Buxton. He just got to stay
before
healthy.
He left. And you saw him at the end of last year, or, you know, truncated season. But during that truncated season, you saw what he could be. And you start to get a glimpse of it. So I still think they can catch Cleveland. I'm not sure that – I know they can't catch the White Sox, so I'm not worried about them. But their bats are good enough. It's just a matter of whether or not Minnesota's pitching will ever come around.
That's the big question for Minnesota.
It's not even the starters.
Yeah.
They have had a reliable bullpen for a long time. And that bullpen is god-awful.
Yeah.
Like Connor Rogers as the closer, awful. We squeezed every bit of juice
out of Alex Colomay. I'm glad you said that. I said that last year. White Sox fans were getting, oh, he's still looking to save them. I'm like, bro. You being a stat hawk right now. Watch this man throw the ball. Yes, right. He gets saves, but then be like, yo, your heart is beating out of your chest.
Right.
Like, there was multiple saves last year. I'm like, oh, my God, it's Colin May. Get ready for the heart attack. With Liam, I'm calm. You know what I'm saying? I'm calm with Liam Hendricks on the mound. With him, it's not. And I do think that Minnesota will have a little, you know, fake run in them, but I don't think they're going to be a threat. And on top of that, we know we can beat these dudes now. Like the little, it's the Twins. Now, we swept them at the crib. We should have swept them in Minnesota. Let them off the hook in that second game. But we're 5-1 to write them, and I just don't think they're worried about them. And the thing about Cleveland, to me, doesn't have enough offense to stick around for the entire season. And you bring
and the regression of Plesac is huge.
Yes. And he's hurt right now.
Right.
Yeah.
See that? Savali, when they had Savali, Plesac, and Bieber all going, that's formidable, man, because 3 out of 5 days, they're going to win the majority of the time.
Yeah.
So if you play 600 baseball, you're going to be in the race.
Yeah.
You're going to compete, and that's what they had. He regressed. Now he's injured. Who steps up? And we'll see. But Cleveland, once again, I think Cleveland is the team that had another good – I think they're top five in bullpen as well.
Right.
So, you know, if they go six and they get to their bullpen – it's going to be a tough series. And the White Sox in Cleveland, they always play these 3-2, 4-3.
Yeah, they're going to be close
games.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right now, we're 4-4 against them. So I think, you know, even this is an opportunity for us to gain ground. But even before that, we're playing the Orioles right now. They're playing the Blue Jays. And I love watching the Blue Jays. Blue Jays is like one of my MLB TV teams. I think once they actually get good pitching, then they're going to take off. The Indians got their ass kicked last night, 11-2. This might be an opportunity for us to gain some ground before we even play them.
Right.
We could possibly.
I think right now, dude, you talk about that, dude. Bichette.
Yeah.
Baby Vlad.
Baby Vlad is cold.
That whole squad.
Yeah.
Lil Biggio.
Yeah. Lil Biggio. Gurriel's brother. Gurriel's little brother. Yeah. Simeon. And like, they got a nice roster that can score runs. You know what I'm saying? And I think. There's a chance we can leave Cleveland with like a 5-6 game lead. And our June is very soft.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of Detroit in our June.
We come back for Detroit.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think the end of July is where it gets important. Like that's when I think we're going to see Eloy back around end of July, early August. I think, you know, Luis probably be early September. You know, Luis probably be early September if we're lucky. But let's talk about the deadline, man. Deadline.
And don't forget, we get Engel back next weekend as
Yes, that's going to be big, too. That's going to be big, too. So I don't have to see, you know, all these damn Lourdes Garcia at-bats. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not expecting Engel to come out and just be mashing shit, but he can be serviceable.
He's been mashing down in Charlotte, though.
Yes, and defensively, he's great. You know what I'm saying? So that's going to be a much-needed bat coming in. But June is next week, and that means the trade deadline is probably like a month and a half away.
Right.
What do you, of course it's, still a while away. What do you think the White Sox are going to be at the deadline? I think a lot of it depends on Eloy's rehab, like how fast he's making moves on whether or not they go get them another bat. What do you want to see them do?
Veteran bat, a veteran left-handed bat. I mean, if it's right-handed, I can deal with that, but I would like another left-handed bat that's dependable. But even more than that, at the top of the list is one more great arm in that bullpen.
Yeah.
Like, I want the bullpen to be on overload, steroids. Like, go get another great arm. You know, so instead of Ruiz getting that high leverage situation, you know, you're putting a – even if you go and get a guy from, like, Kansas City, like a Wade Davis, that's a veteran.
Yeah.
That's been through the wars, that can come out and get – you could put him in a dirty situation and he'll come out of that unscathed because he's been through the wars and he knows how to do it. You know, that's just a name I threw out. But if you want to go get somebody that has a little bit more stuff than Wade Davis right now at his age, he still throws 95. But if you want to go get someone that's still throwing like 98, 99, I mean, it's a couple of teams that you can go. You might be able to go and get the kid, what's the kid from Milwaukee, the left-hander?
Who, the closer or
Yeah.
Hader.
You can go get Hader, you know, because you, I mean, you can throw Gavin Sheets.
Yeah.
You know, you can go, you can even Gavin throw Ronaldo.
Gavin Sheets and Jake Berger are going to be the nice little dangling.
Right.
You know, dangling pieces. Pieces for the White Sox.
You know, give us Hader. I mean, if you give us Hader.
God bless.
God bless.
God bless.
Especially in the postseason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, it's bullpen and another bat.
Yeah.
And not just a bat that can get on base. I want a bat that's like a home run threat.
Yeah. Somebody's got a little power.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a little power. Yeah. I have full supreme faith in Rick Hahn when it comes to that. I think Rick Hahn.
Oh, you do now?
Yeah. And when it comes to that, yeah, I do. I wanted him to pull the trigger. Not, you know, just, you know, I just don't like how sometimes I feel like Jerry doesn't let Rick do what he wants to do. You know what I'm saying? Like,
facts.
You know, I'm 100% sure him and Kenny did not like the La Russa hiring. And I feel like Jerry was like, yo, that's my man. Y'all going to deal with that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Can you absolve him of the Machado thing yet?
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not over the Machado thing yet. I'm not. I don't think I ever will. And look, I give it to Yoan. Yoan's been way better at third base than I expected. But living on the West Coast, I watch a lot of Padres baseball. And I just can't get over not signing Machado. And I really can't get over trading fucking Fernando Tatis. Now, that would have been the worst defensive infield in the league with him and T.A., but they'd have put up some runs. They'd have put up some runs. I'd have forgave him.
That was – I have to go back and look at the – no, the Tatis trade was made before the Chris Sale trade.
Yeah, it was 2016 when we were, like, faking the wild card hunt.
Right. That's why they went and got
James Shields. He was terrible.
James Shields. So yeah, but at that point in time, I think he was at high A.
Yeah.
Was he in high A at that
time? Yeah, he was not talked about. Like, I didn't hear that much about Fernando. I mean, when the deal went down, like, of course it's all hindsight, by the way. Because when the deal went down, I was like, I don't even know who the fuck this is. Like, okay, whatever. Like, if James Shields got a little bit more juice in his arm, if he can give me a little bit of big game James, maybe it works out. So all this is hindsight anger. You know what I'm saying? Like, not like I was hot at the time. It's not like how Cubs fans were when they gave us Eloy. And by the way, Dylan Cease now too. So shout out to Theo.
Shout out to Theo.
You know, blessing us before he left. But it's just Tatis is such a star now. Like, he hit – it was a home run against the Astros last night. I was like, oh, my God. Like, our lineup is great. But could you imagine him in there? So it's just like, you know, them the two problems I had. And the main thing about the Machado thing that made me angry was that 25 extra million that Machado wanted, you gave it to his bum-ass family members. You could have just gave it to him.
Yeah.
Facts. That's what annoyed me about it.
Because that Alonso deal meant them.
And they cut him. They cut him halfway through the season.
Hey, you remember that text I sent you about that cat Dylan?
Yeah.
When they did the Yoan Moncada travel day.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw it. After Dylan's start the other night, Mercedes came up after him on the Zoom. So Cease gets through with the media, and he's getting ready to get up, and you hear Yerm like, hey, where you going? Hey, don't leave me. Don't leave me, I'm rolling. And it was funny. But you remember, I told you Cease is that dude. Remember I told you that?
Yeah, you did.
But he doesn't look like it. But that cat, Dylan, he pulls him, boy.
Cease pulls him. Yeah, he has a nice ride. He just look like he quiet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he just look like he quiet.
That cat Dylan pulls him. He knows the spots in the city.
Shout out to Dylan Cease, man.
Can you imagine him and Yerm walking through?
Yerm, I love how Yerm refers himself in third person. That's like one of all my favorite things. He's like, yeah, I'm the Yerminator, man. Like, you got to mess with him, man. One last thing before we get out of here, man. Let's talk about the White Sox. Announcement should be coming soon, and they're going to be signing international prospect Oscar Colas. He's being called the Cuban Ohtani, and that's big praise. Like I said, I live in L.A. Ohtani is the guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is incredible. What do you expect from Colas? What do you think you're expecting to see him? And, you know, I love the international signings for the White Sox because Jerry's not going to spend money in free agency, but he's going to spend money in international. But what do you think, you know, we can expect from him?
This is what I'll say. Kudos to Rick Hahn that when the reformation project of this entire organization from the minor leagues and structurally what they're going to do, he was the one that said, if we are not going to spend big money on free agents, we have to invest heavily in our international pool And they went down there, they established a school. The first time they established a school over in Venezuela, they started making connects. They go and they get Jose, he's the anchor. And then next thing you know, they get Louis Robert, they get Micker Adolfo, who, you know, has been battling injuries, but he's much better down in Double A. And then the next thing you know, there's Baby Cespedes.
Yeah.
Then they get the number one pitcher. And then Oscar Colas wants to come, when other teams would probably give him more money, but he sees the culture.
Yeah.
And the Latin flair and flavor.
We are the Cuban home, you know.
And Pito is a mentor to all.
Yeah, I was
all
about to say guys. they look at Jose Abreu Pito, like he's Jordan.
Yes. Yes. So it's like now you're building something, and now you're building an organization that has talent that's traditional and non-traditional, because you've had five straight years of being in the top 10 of the MLB draft. This is the first time they've picked out of the top 10 this year. They picked 21st right behind the Cubs.
Yeah.
And they're slotted to take this 19-year-old pitcher straight out of high school. That's a flamethrower. That's coming up next month. But now they're doing it the Dodger way without paying the big money for free agents.
Yeah.
Because we know Jerry's not going to do that.
We all know Magic and them are paying money. They paid big money for Trevor Bauer. They paid Mookie. Right. You know what I'm saying? They gave Mookie ridiculous contract. Like, I don't even it's a ridiculous contract. Jerry's not doing it. You know, but they're at least, that's what I said, we got to enjoy this run. I don't know how much this core is going to be coming back when their contracts come up.
The economic model, not only did they do that and invest in the international pool and down in Venezuela, but then the economic model that they changed, which is a far cry from what Jerry Reinsdorf was willing to do, was that they were willing to go into contracts early for young players, whether it's T.A. or whether it's Louis Robert, and say, yeah, we're going to give you the sign-in bonus, but we see and believe in you, so we're going to give you this 3 to 4 year extension and lock you up. So now we have Eloy, Louis, and T.A. locked up until like 2024, 2025 at a very good rate. And if you win with them, I would venture to say you might not be able to keep them all.
But you'll be able to keep like three of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. You change the way you form your talent, but then they change the economic model of how they pay their players. We're not going to wait until they hit free agency. We're going to pay them early, make them feel loved, make them feel like, man, yeah, we love you. No other team loves you like us. We paid you before you did anything. Something.
Yeah. And that's one thing the Reinsdorf had, like, despite whatever the Reinsdorf, you know how fans feel about him, players love the Reinsdorf. Michael Jordan still plays golf with Jerry Reinsdorf. Like,
facts.
He blames Jerry Cross for all that shit, you know.
Right.
Jay Williams will tell you every time, like, yo, the Reinsdorf saved my life. Like, you know, everybody loves it. And that's the thing where, you know, quick basketball note, like, that's why I feel like it's a possibility Derrick Rose could come back. He says, I got a good relationship with the Reinsdorfs. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that I feel like will probably be important when it does come to a negotiation time.
Bro, I didn't see the game. That dude dropped 30 last night.
30 and they lost. Vintage Chicago Bulls era. D-Rose.
This goes back to, I don't know if you saw it on Inside the NBA. Real quick, Kenny Smith said, this dude is the only player I've seen change the way he had to play.
Yeah.
And still be a star.
Yeah.
He's like, I've never seen a dude totally have to depend on skill set rather than his athleticism and still do what he does.
And he's going to get paid this offseason.
Oh, you think so?
He's getting paid.
Talk about, man, betting on yourself?
Yeah, he's getting off this playoff. You know, he's one of the things they took from the Knicks from like, oh, that cool team to top four. And then he's been the only one showing up in these playoffs. He's getting a big bag.
Yeah.
You know,
let me ask you a question, because I want to get, because this goes back to the division, the Central.
Okay.
If I said, I'm going to make a statement and I want you to tell me whether or not you agree or disagree with it.
Okay.
The American League Central is the cheapest division in all of Major League Baseball from an ownership standpoint.
It probably is. Like, I'll probably say NL Central's up there too. Both Central divisions are like mirror each other.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Cleveland, they traded. There was no reason to trade Francisco Lindor. The Royals, after they won a championship, they let their whole core walk.
Right.
I have to agree with that. Detroit always been cheap. So, I agree with that. It's a cheap ass.
Detroit had like, what, 2 or 3 years where they were paying Maglio. They gave Maglio the bag. They gave Miguel Cabrera the bag. And I think they went
to let Scherzer walk.
Yeah. They had Verlander. They had Scherzer.
Yeah.
They had a whip.
Traded Verlander, let Scherzer walk. So, I agree with that. I agree with that for sure, man. It's always good having you on, bro, to talk, White Sox baseball, man. Let everybody know where they can follow you, man. You know, anything you got going on, your podcast, man, let them know where they can follow you.
Man, you can follow me at A2S Network. That's all about content. I wish my guy was on. He's at the game right now, but we're going to be doing a cross brand. It's going to be called Source on the Soul, on the Soil. And it's a White Sox podcast with myself and Terrence Tomlin. Networks coming together. We're going to be launching that in the next week or so. And you can check it out on A2Net's Wet Network or on the Biggs Network. It'll be on both networks. And then, of course, according to sources with my guy Brian Crawford and Chris Kaysen, we're going to wait until the end of the playoffs to try to just wrap everything up, including the Bulls. And we'll do it like that. So we're waiting for that. And BC he's actually working on a documentary that I can't give too much on right now, but it's pretty big. It's a Chicago documentary with Chicago Hoopers, and everybody's going to be impressed when it's all said and done. So lock in with him at B_Crawford4D. And of course, C4 Dunk, my guy, that's another co-host with me on According to Sources. He continues to write great stuff about health and nutrition for athletes, whether it's Forbes, GQ, and Men's Fitness. He's been writing great pieces for them. And this dude is the luckiest dude on the Nike app, the sneaker app. This dude has hit, he's hit three straight shoes.
Nike on my bad side, man. They canceled my Southside jersey this morning. I'm extremely upset about that. Yeah, they said it's not available. It's what the email said. Not available. They canceled my order this morning.
You know what happened? What happened was
they probably sold out too fast.
This is the dumbest thing in the world. First of all, the supply, it was a short supply.
And they've been doing that with all the city jerseys, because a lot of people was trying to buy the Miami Marlins jersey and they said they had the same problem.
So they had the rollout. The TA jersey sold out in like 2 hours. Minutes.
Yeah, right.
No, it was less than that. Because the stock is coming out of the Sports Depot at guaranteed rate.
Okay, so that makes sense.
That's why all the jerseys are being ordered from. But if you have people actually physically coming there,
they get it first.
Buying the jerseys, they get them first, and then they go through your orders later. That sucks, man.
What I gotta do now is I gotta get my dad to go up there and get it when they restock this weekend, which is gonna annoy
me. Mike Huff was on with us during the rain delay last night on ESPN 1000, and he assured fans that in about 7 days. The depot and the stadium will be in stock, and don't worry about it.
Yeah, I gotta get my dad to that. It's gonna annoy me because I'm like, which name you want? He's gonna be on the phone loud as hell, like what, Anderson, Brian, what's his name? Like, you know,
at the store,
at the store, loud as hell. But man, it's always good to have you on, bro. Follow him on all the sites he listed, man. We'll be back at 40/40 Club next week, me and Pierce. We got a new episode of Ball Don't Lie out right now. Dante, and I got the homie Mariano on, man. We break it down first week of NBA playoffs, man. A lot of y'all favorite superstars been, you know, the bubble performances ain't acting up when it's real life. It's not matching up. So check that out. This podcast is a Patreon exclusive. This episode is going to be free this week. But if you want to hear this episode every other week, subscribe, patreon.com/barbershairnetwork. Follow me at Barbershare Scott. And I'll holler at y'all in 2 weeks, man. We out.